From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made on September 21st in New York City in what will be the largest single event on climate ever organized. That's what the organizers say. It's a mobilization consisting of numerous events. There will be symposiums, presentations, and lots over several days, but one big march, they hope, on the 21st, roughly 3 miles in Manhattan, designed to get the attention of some leaders from around the world with the UN summit happening on climate change. What's realistic? What are the goals not only of this march but of this movement? What is the Rochester People's Climate Coalition and what's going to be happening later this month? We've got a panel of guests that's going to help us with this as we talk about climate change and policy going forward. We welcome back Susan Spencer. She's finishing a PhD in microsystems engineering and recently attended a training in Australia designed to help a new generation of communication leaders on climate change. Tomorrow, Susan is going to be giving a presentation on climate change at the Webster Public Library at 7 p.m. Susan, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us, we have Sue Smith, who is a mom, and she's also a former high school science teacher. She's been working as an adjunct, and she is part of the local movement as well. Sue, nice to see you.
Nice to meet you.
And Abby McHugh Griff is here. She is going to talk to us about being a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby and participating in some of these events going forward. She also recently completed a PhD in music education at the Eastman School of Music, but spends, I guess, a lot of your time now in climate activism.
Indeed, I do.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
All right, Susan, I'm going to turn to you for some of the details on what's happening this month. And actually, let's get real immediate here before we even get to what's going on down in Manhattan, et cetera. Tomorrow night, I mentioned that you've got a presentation, 7 p.m. at the Webster Public Library. Exactly about what?
Well, I'll be discussing the climate crisis that we are currently in and how we've got there and what we need to do moving forward. So the climate crisis, we are currently undergoing a period of global warming here on planet Earth, and 95 to 100% certainty that this has been caused by human activity, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The lowest emission scenario predictions, if we have immediate and swift mitigation with strong emissions targets that we're able to hit, will be a 0.5 to 3.1 degree increase in global temperature. The highest could be 4.7 to 8.6 degree increase. And these increases are going to have severe and long-term effects on the habitability of the planet. So we would be seeing a rise in sea levels, changes in precipitation, desertification, extreme weather events, ocean acidification and mass extinction. And for humanity, we're going to see a loss of food security and a loss of habitat. So I'll be covering a lot of that at my talk tomorrow.
Okay. And we've talked about this before. Everywhere you go when you talk about this, you always have to deal with questions on whether or not it's actually happening. But some of your presentation is just laying out the facts, right?
Exactly. So my presentation will detail that it is happening, and we will establish and understand the scientific consensus that 97% of scientists agree that not only is global warming occurring, but it's man-made, and we are the only ones who will be able to stop it.
Yeah, and what's really been sort of strange lately is this the confusion over some of the short-term trends in a long-term picture. And there's two quick examples are Arctic sea ice. 2012 was a really bad year for Arctic sea ice. 2013 and 2014 have been less bad. So that leads some people to say, oh, well, see, it's bouncing back. And then when you look at temperatures in an 8 to 10-year range instead of 100 to more years, it's easy to – I always think of it this way. Let's say you're going to climb a mountain. I don't know if our guests here have ever climbed a mountain. I've climbed part of the mountain. I've never climbed a full mountain. But let's say you're going to climb a mountain. When you do that, you're going to climb for a while, and then you'll probably hit a little plateau where you'll catch your breath and you'll walk for a bit. Then you'll climb again and then maybe hit a little plateau. And the interesting thing would be if someone were to check in on your trip up the mountain where you hit one of these plateaus and were to say, see, you're not actually climbing at all. You're just walking on flat ground. It's nothing is actually happening. You would say, well, yes, for the last hour I've been walking on flat ground. For the last 24 hours, though, I've been climbing. You know, we're headed upward. And for someone to say, no, you're not, that's sort of the discussion that we've had about Arctic sea ice and temperature. So is that sort of a good way to think of it, Susan?
Yeah, I think it's really important to reiterate that when science examines climate change and global warming, we're doing so over a long period of time, and we have to take into account all of the data that's available. Because of the scientific consensus, we are where we are right now in terms of global action. So the summit that has been called September 23rd, 2014, is the United Nations Climate Summit. And this was called by Ban Ki-moon because he recognizes the urgency of the situation and the need to have dramatic and immediate action. It differs from the traditional negotiations because he has called heads of state to the table in this case. So these are going to be world leaders sitting down together, and he has called for strong and bold commitments for this climate summit. And this will then lead into the so-called Paris Accords in 2015. So this is, the formal name is the 21st Conference of Parties on Climate Change. And the goals of this are to re-ratify the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change with entry into force by 2020, so action required by all parties by 2020. The emissions targets are very, very significant, so a 40% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030 and a 60% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2040. So your statements about how people kind of are a bit wishy-washy on whether or not this is happening, wondering how bad it is, the international science community is not wondering, and neither is the international community in terms of global affairs and world policy.
Okay. And by the way, Charlotte on the phone and others, if you want to join the conversation, we're going to get to you in just a moment. The number to call is 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Susan, when it comes to this UN summit, you mentioned that Ban Ki-moon has called this with sort of an urgency. And sometimes these events just become sort of showpieces. You know, a lot of people showing up at a big event, looking for the political glory that goes with ostensibly addressing something. But what realistically could be on the table in terms of policy?
Well, the negotiations are, of course, at a much higher pay grade than mine, so I can't speak to detailed specifics, but this is where world leaders will be interacting with each other and setting meetable targets.
And, so it's serious.
It is very serious, and the seriousness of it is, of course, emphasized by the fact that Ban Ki-moon has called this, but the primary focus for us regular people who are not at the UN summit level is to demonstrate to these world leaders that we have a desire for this change and that we want to create the political mandate for this change. And that is why we are organizing and participating in the People's Climate March on September 21st.
Okay, so what's give me sort of the outline of what that day is going to look like, what the march is going to look like, and again, sort of some of the larger goals that around it.
Sure. So I'm going to speak briefly on that before I turn over to my colleagues here. But this is a movement of movements. So in order to organize this march, there are over 950 partnering organizations from all different disciplines, all walks of life, all political affiliations, religious affiliations that are coming together to organize and get a significant number of people present and in the streets at 11:30 a.m. on Sunday, marching for 3 miles. And the goal is to take to the streets to demand the world that we know we can have and the world that we need to have. And Rochester's strong participation in this march is critical to demonstrate to our local leaders that we support their efforts to address climate change. And I would turn to my colleagues Abby and Sue to discuss a little bit more about the march itself, Rochester's involvement, and how we're all participating.
Well, Abby, give me a sense for why you're involved and what your thoughts on that day will look like.
Well, for me, I have not been involved in the climate change movement for very long at all. You know, it's something I've been concerned about for years and really not done anything about until, I guess, February this year. I really started to connect with local organizations to see what I could do about this.
Yeah, because again, this is not a career for you.
No, No. I would say it's a full-time unpaid job, but it is not a career.
And it's not what you were initially went to school for?
Not what I went to school for. Right. But, you know, I really feel a strong moral obligation to participate in this struggle. It is that. And in part, what really motivated my participation was I gave birth to my first child. And that was huge. That was huge in terms of a call to action and why this is urgent.
Sue, as a retired scientist, well, hold on a second. As a former scientist who's now an adjunct, well,
correct.
I just demoted you. Look at that. That was just a host misspeaking
no
on a
problem.
Tuesday. As a former science teacher mm-hmm. now, your own professional background, how does that inform your participation in this kind of event?
Well, I have been following the climate change issue since in 1989. I went to Colgate for a bachelor's degree and studied geology. And at that time, one of my favorite professors, Chief, you know, he said to us, you know, caution us. Don't say just because today is cold that there's no climate change, today's hot, oh, there's climate change. You know, you got to watch the long-term trends. And I've spent the last two decades watching those long-term trends and seeing one decade, the hottest on record, replaced by the next decade, hotter still. And like Abby becoming, during that time, also a parent, and working with children, being concerned about the future for my own and for other children, I have to move to action. And when, for me personally, I saw the carbon dioxide levels get over 400 parts per million, I said, you know, I can't wait any longer for my politicians to make the right decisions. I have to get involved because I can't live with the consequences of inaction.
And so as... Again, it's someone with that scientific training and background here, mm-hmm. you know, you constantly have to deal with whether it's students or people in your own life who will say, well, Rochester had a pretty cold winter and it's been a pretty cold summer. It's easy to forget that on the West Coast they have a water crisis and that mm-hmm. our world is a little bit bigger than, you know, 20-minute drive every day.
Definitely. And I think we struggle as a species, as humans, we tend to focus on short-term experiences. And like last year, people were saying, oh, it was so snowy. But actually, we were only at the 10-year average of snowfall. If you looked at the 20 or 30-year average of snowfall, we were still down by 2 feet. So we are experiencing a change in climate. And even since I moved to Rochester 8 years ago, I think our gardening zone has shifted. And that's long-term climate change.
All right, let me grab a couple of calls here. If you want to join the conversation, you can do that, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. This is Charlotte, who is a bus captain for the event. Is that right, Charlotte?
Yes, that's right. I have been involved with this formation of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, and I've been in charge of arranging for the bus transportation and helping people to get tickets onto that bus. But I really wanted to talk about the Rochester People's Climate Coalition and how exciting this has been. This really started up about a week ago, less than a week ago. We already have over 16 organizations signed up for it across a broad spectrum. I sense that there's the people in the community are thinking that it's time. You know, people have been concerned about this and didn't know what to do about it. I've been concerned about it for decades and really have done almost nothing. And when I heard about this march, I said, this is something we can do. It's right in our own backyard in New York City. We don't have to travel around the world. We don't even have to travel across the country. We just have to get to New York City.
But Charlotte, give me a sense for what some of the goals are. And again, Susan touched on letting our local leaders know that there is a movement and an interest, but what can realistically be done? What's the mission of this kind of an organization?
So the mission of this organization is strictly to encourage Rochesterians to get to the People's Climate March. We have only formed in less than a week. We don't really have time to gain consensus amongst all of these groups about extensive policy positions and all of that, but we all agree that getting to this march is critical. It's critical that we make the statement that it is time, it's long past time to stop digging the hole deeper, that we need to start figuring a way to climb out. And there's many different ideas out there as to how to climb out. but we need to stop digging the hole deeper.
And Charlotte, if people want to get involved, I know our guests in studio can talk about it too, but anything you want our listeners to hear?
Just memorize and type in the URL peoplesclimate.org/WesternNY.
peoplesclimate.org/WesternNY. Charlotte, thanks for taking the time to join the conversation. And so you're getting a sense now of just trying to get to this movement, trying to get to this event. But, you know, Susan, our next caller, and we're going to get to John in just a second, is, you know, he has called this program not only expressing doubts about climate change, but also saying, even if it's happening, can we do something without gutting ourselves economically? You know, is there any sort of a scalable alternative? What can realistically happen? You see a number of varying reports on how feasible it is to make changes. And generally, the conservative criticism of this is that, okay, even if it's happening, the change that would be required to curb it or stop it would really, really devastate us economically.
I think that we need to take into account the fact that if we do not curb or stop it, there won't be much of an economy for us to be worried about anymore. So if we look at one of the latest reports that has come out by Hank Paulson, who's not exactly a liberal bastion, his report is called Risky Business, and he discusses the deleterious effects to the economy if we delay action on climate, be it through emissions reductions, renewable energy. As Charlotte said, there's many different policy initiatives that will allow us to stop digging and turn this around. But the cost of inaction is incredibly high, both financially and to us as a species and to the planet that we live on.
Should we have to suffer economically for several decades while we get a new economy online?
Most economists don't believe that suffering would be the appropriate way to describe the transition. There are reports out now that the larger first world economies would be able to actually triple their gross domestic product by a transition to renewable energies at percentages like that. We're not really looking at a struggle. We're looking at job creation. We're looking at innovation. We're looking at more kids taking on technical programs in colleges. These are all positive things that will have a great impact both on the local Rochester economy as well as the global economy.
And interesting, she mentioned Henry Paulson, who was the former U.S. Secretary of the Treasury under George W. Bush, and also served, I think, with Goldman Sachs. Yeah, he had it for 3 decades at Goldman Sachs on Wall Street. He is, you can find him now at riskybusiness.org, and his next book is on dealing with the United States and China's relationship, but he writes about his life as a conservationist and how he thinks even Wall Street has to get serious about this. So it's an interesting counterpoint to a lot of sort of the stereotypes out there, I think. All right, John Rochester, go ahead, John. Your turn to weigh in.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Susan. Yeah. Well, Hank Paulson, he's a corporatist. I mean, he'll go along with, he's like Warren Buffett. Whatever benefits them, they're going to do it and take the benefits of whoever's in power. It's a money grab, really. But the climate change thing is completely overblown. I agree there is climate change, but when you look at being man-made or not, it's very insignificant, in my opinion, that it's man-made. Just take a look at this area right in Rochester. I think 12, 14,000 years ago, we were under a 2-mile glacier. The glacier melted. It wasn't due to a man-made factors. The other thing that I think is a big factor in climate change is the sun. And I know about a decade ago there was some data taken on the surface temperature on Mars rose. And it wasn't because of man-made climate change. It was because of solar activity. And the sun, I think, can cause and does cause the heating up of the planets. And in fact, I think there was a study done that there's In billions of years from now, the sun will actually explode and encompass and destroy our solar system and a number of other solar.
Well, hold on, John. Let me jump in and say, first of all, the long-term outlook for the sun and for our planet is probably not good if we're going to go into the billions of years. So I don't plan to be around when that happens, but eventually the sun is probably going to meet sort of a gory end. It often does for celestial bodies if you give it billions of years. But, Susan, you hear this a lot. That's another one on the other side that says the sun is doing it. What do you think?
Well, John, thank you for your call and for your points. I would encourage you to come to my talk tomorrow at 7 p.m. where I'm happy to get into more of the nitty-gritty details with you. But I need to categorically refute the fact, the assertion that climate change is not occurring. Climate change is occurring and global warming is occurring, and they are occurring at rates that are not sustainable for most species on this planet, including humanity. Additionally, climate scientists and a variety of other types of scientists have a 97% agreement that this is caused by man. It is caused by our carbon emissions. They are directly leading to buildup of CO2 in the atmosphere, which is causing a significant impact to the greenhouse effect, and it is warming our planet. So the analogy that I always use is, if you were feeling incredibly ill and you went to 100 doctors and 97 of those doctors said, you have liver cancer and we need to act immediately or you're going to die. And 3 doctors said, we think you have liver cancer and we just kind of want to wait and see. My question is, would you act or would you wait? And I think most of us would act. So in terms of addressing the climate change portion and the denial of science, I'm happy to discuss that more at my talk tomorrow, 7 p.m., Webster Public Library. But for us who are here in studio today, our main goal is to get people interested and excited and engaged, as Charlotte and Abby
I
and
do that
Sue
too,
have been
way.
Doing.
I say Charlotte
it's
when it's
because
Charlotte.
Of the, yeah,
it's because
our
you
town.
Live here.
It's Rochester,
right?
So, I mean, the goal is to get people interested in going to the People's Climate March, because we really need to get across to all of our leaders, not just the leaders that are going to be at the UN, but the worldwide audience that will be watching, how critical of a topic this is. And in order to do that, as our bus captain who called in mentioned, we have a variety of buses that we have secured, and Abby and Sue can give a bit more information on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's really very exciting, because as Charlotte mentioned, you know, we came together from some diverse backgrounds and different organizations and founded the Rochester People's Climate Coalition really on about the 27th of August. And since then, we've gotten 16 organizations to sponsor, to be sponsors for our coalition. They represent over 100,000 community members, from labor to faith communities to, of course, environmental groups. And I think that demonstrates a growing concern and call in our own community that we begin to act on climate change. So what we have now are 2 buses, and we started with about 112 seats available. We're down to only 76 to go, and we are encouraging people to sign up for those buses or to donate so that we can offer more reduced fare tickets for people who might need that, such as students. And the bus will leave at about 2 a.m.
2 a.m. It is a big trip for one day.
It's on a Sunday morning, right?
It's on a early wee hours of the morning on a Sunday. And the bus will come back about a little less than 24 hours later, arrive back in Rochester about midnight. And from having the experience of doing one of these bus trips in the past, I went to Washington, D.C., I guess it was last February. I've got to say that it is an experience worth having. Just to be part of a movement like this, to be at the march, but also that bus trip. You know, you meet a lot of folks who are invested in this, committed to this, doing their best work. And it gives you opportunities to get involved. But fortunately, you know, we are realistic. We understand that not everybody is going to be able to get down to New York City for that day, although we would certainly encourage everybody to go down to New York City. But we do have a couple of things going on here locally that we would love to have everyone come out to support. Basically to raise awareness about climate change itself, about what we're doing locally, about actions we need from our politicians here right in Rochester and what issues we're seeing right here in Rochester. So we have a press conference scheduled for Tuesday, September 9th at 11 o'clock on the steps of City Hall. And we also have what we were affectionately referring to as a pep rally for a while. Mm-hmm. It has now been renamed an art build. But this will be an event. It's on September 6th from 1 to 3 o'clock at the
Visual Studios Workshop.
On Prince Street.
Mm-hmm. And it's free.
And it's free. And actually, it's family-friendly and free.
Correct.
And this event, be some tabling going on, different organizations there sharing what it is that they're doing to support this effort, but also opportunities just to get to know other people who are involved in this, unleash your creativity a little bit on some poster making, some T-shirt decorating, that sort of thing. And we look forward to it. We think it's going to be a lot of fun.
So a lot coming up here. Here's what we're going to do now. We're going to take the shortest break in radio, and every single available phone line is now occupied. So if you are waiting on the phone, we're going to come back and we are going to fire through the calls as best we can. So be ready. Thank you for waiting on the line. Short break. I'm Evan Dawson. More right here next with you on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we welcome Tim Wu, candidate for Lieutenant Governor of New York State, to the program. He's running with Zephyr Teachout, Democrats running against Andrew Cuomo and Kathy Hochul 1 week from today. Now, what exactly is Tim Wu going to bring to the table? And could he win next week even if his running mate loses? What would that mean for November? All of that discussed Wednesday on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Hi, it's David Green from NPR's Morning Edition. On Tuesday, September 9th, I will be in Rochester with Planet Money's Robert Smith for NPR Presents Family Matters in partnership with the University of Rochester. Please join me and my guests in Hatch Recital Hall for an unconventional discussion about college, home ownership, retirement, and your financial lifetime. Space is limited, so please reserve your seat today at wxxi.org/events.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking about an event coming up September 21st in New York City that is aiming to be the largest single event on climate change ever organized, a march in Manhattan in conjunction with the UN summit there. But there's a lot of other things going on as well, and one of them is an event tomorrow night. Susan Spencer at 7 p.m. is going to be presenting at the Webster Public Library about climate change. And Susan is, among other things, part of a team that went to Australia to sort of be educated as part of the next generation of climate change educators and communicators around the world, and she's right here in Rochester. We also have Sue Smith in studio, a teacher, a high school science teacher, working as an adjunct since relocating to Rochester 9 years ago, and a mom. She wants to make sure that's clear as well. Abby McHugh Griffa is also here. She's a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby, and she is also part of this event coming up September 21st in New York City. All right, to the phones. Matthew, I think you are next. Matthew in the city of Rochester, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a point that regardless of whether 97% of scientists agree that climate change is man-made, it doesn't matter, because climate change is happening, and I think the majority of scientists would agree that climate change is happening, and if the point is, it is, then there is something that we should do about it regardless of if it's man-made or not.
Yeah, I think the question about whether it's man-made is part of the consideration of whether it can be curbed in some way, I guess. Susan, you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that's an accurate characterization. Thanks for your point, Matt. I think that with the climate crisis that we are in, an acknowledgement of what has impacted it the most will help us identify the best solutions and policy moving forward.
What do you think, Matthew?
I agree with that, but I think one of the main sticking points that a lot of a lot of people have on the political right is if it's man-made. And I think if you just take that point out of the discussion and just agree that it is happening, then maybe they would be more apt to act to help prevent it or to curb climate change in general.
Yeah, I think it's a fair consideration and an interesting point for the discussion, Matthew. I think I appreciate the call. This is also John Day. We've got two more Johns waiting, different Johns, I think. This is John in the city of Rochester as well. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi. So if there's something we can do locally. The biggest opponent of taking any steps to address climate change nationally is the National Chamber of Commerce. And the local affiliate is Rochester Business Alliance. And I know Bill McKibben had been organizing communities to get their local chambers to disaffiliate with the National Chamber of Commerce and to as a way to pressure them to stop obstructing what we can do. And, you know, of course, they're in the way of a massive boost to our economy. Think of the steam engine. Green jobs would move us well into the 21st century. So being obstructionist, and what we should be doing is putting pressure on the Rochester Business Alliance. I had never heard anything from Sandy Parker about her colleagues at the National Chamber and their role in stopping this from moving forward. So it seems like now with new leadership at the RBA, we've got an opportunity to see what they're capable of.
Thanks for the call, John. I have to say, I mean, Sandy is not here, nor are some of her colleagues from RBA, and I don't know offhand exactly what their position is. I don't want to speak for anybody there, but we'll see if they want to weigh in on that part of the equation. Any of our panel want to weigh in on that?
I just that if they would, you know, John, if you could come out to the Art Build on the 6th, you'd have a chance to network with some other local groups that might, you know, have some more information about that particular tact, and you could get involved with issues like divesting or other strategies to move us forward. We would love to see you there from 1 to 3, and it's free.
And to some degree, some in the business community may be suspicious of a green jobs movement, not because they don't think climate change is happening, but because there have been some sort of stops and starts or some ups and downs. Mm-hmm. You know, the government's heavy support of corn-based ethanol has largely proven to be a disaster, and in many ways, you know, you look at some of these investments, and people can get skeptical. So I'm not endorsing or opposing any notion of green jobs. I'm saying that may be some of the root of why there is some dissonance there. What do you think, Abby?
Well, Evan, I think it's worth pointing out that the green economy already supports more jobs than the fossil fuel economy, and it has for years. And way more jobs. And we're not talking small numbers here at all. And this is even though the renewable energy industry is relatively small at this point. And just here in Rochester, in terms of what this means for our economy, I think it's important to point out that one of our coalition members is the Rochester Genesee Valley Area Labor Federation. And they represent somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000 citizens in Monroe County and surrounding counties. And I think, you know, one of the reasons they're probably interested in this issue and invested in this issue is in part because of the jobs that it will create. You know, as at present, our infrastructure is not really up to the job of standing up to climate change. You know, we've already been seeing with the flooding that's happening, our roads are washing out, our sewers are backing up. And to bring our infrastructure into the modern age, essentially, or into the climate change age, there's a lot of jobs to be had there.
Yeah, certainly local labor has supported the jobs opportunities here. Mm-hmm. But we also, on Friday on this program, we had a coalition of labor leaders, and one of our listeners asked the question, if fracking jobs paid a prevailing wage, would you support it? And they said, technically, our position is that yes, we would support fracking in New York State if it pays prevailing wage for labor. Is there some dissonance there? Is that a concern?
Well, I cannot speak directly to their position on fracking. Certainly, from the numbers that I have heard in the past on fracking, the number of jobs that will be created by that, just in terms of number of jobs, I don't know how much they pay, is just a far, far smaller number of jobs than what it'll take to build wind turbines, to install solar. There's more jobs to be had in that sector, and jobs that will move us toward this clean energy economy that we want.
Yeah, I think it sounds like part of the point is labor supports where jobs are, mm-hmm. and they're supporting green energy in many ways. So let's stay with the phone calls, and on the subject of man-made global warming, we've got a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is Michelle. Michelle, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much for letting me hop on. I'm Michelle, coordinator with Mothers Out Front in Cambridge, Mass., just for full disclosure purposes. And I don't want to belabor the point with debating climate change, but I find that if people don't hear their immediate questions addressed, they can sometimes fixate on those things. So I just want to say very quickly about solar emissions. Our solar activity has actually gone down recently, and Susan, if you could verify for me that that's correct. I believe the activity has been lower the last 10 years, and then in terms of carbon, whether the emissions are man-made, my understanding is we can actually track an isotope that comes from burning fossil fuels, and it's been determined that that is a huge source of the carbon emission rise.
So to confirm what Michelle has said, yes, solar emissions have been decreasing over the last decade, and we are able to very accurately measure the amount of emissions that are occurring from man-made burning of fossil fuels because of exactly the type of carbon isotoping and dating that Michelle has mentioned. So she's completely correct on that.
And Michelle, what's the organization again that you're with?
I'm with Mothers Out Front. We are actually working with mothers who are quite terrified about the prospects for future generations and looking for ways to get involved in the movement. And we are giving them very special ways to do that suited to their lives and their concerns.
Michelle, thanks for the call. And as I let Michelle go, I'll say we've got two moms in studio, and they're both nodding right along. You're familiar, both familiar here?
We are indeed familiar with the organization, the Mothers Out Front. They are based in Massachusetts currently, but they are moving into New York State, starting with Rochester, New York. And we are involved in that movement.
And as moms, that's a large draw for both of our guests have said that's a big part of why you've gotten involved.
Absolutely. This is, without a doubt, the biggest issue that our generation, my children's generation, is confronting. And we're at a crossroads right now that we will either move in a direction where we bring down carbon emissions and our children have an optimistic future, or we will continue as business as usual and have ever-increasing chaotic climate and a tumultuous political environment for them to, you know, grow up and become a part of. So as a parent, I'm very vested in moving us in a positive direction. And so you should come to the People's Climate March.
And our press conference and the Art Build. Come to it all.
And the website, peoplesclimate.org/WesternNYC.
All right, back to the phones. Frank wants to talk about the media's role in all of this. Go ahead, Frank.
Hi, Evan. I really appreciate you doing this program. I think one of the biggest elements that's missing in this climate debate is that the media hasn't been connecting the dots very well at all. It's why we get a lot of people calling in not knowing the science and other aspects of climate change that make it seem like a special interest. It isn't. Climate change is really mainstream, and one of the things that makes it mainstream is that it's our planners, the people who do our infrastructure, as Susan mentioned, our transportation, our wastewater, our water, our telecommunications, those things need to, the public needs to support the leaders over election period after election period to update these things so we're ready for the more frequent heavy downpours that will happen in this area and the more heat. I mean, the people of low income should be very concerned about this because a lot of the issue is about public health, which is not being connected by the media. It's not being connected by the public health department. But we're seeing incidence increases in Lyme disease, West Nile virus, and heat. If there's heat waves, people have to get out of the heat for extended periods of time. And this is all stuff that needs to be planned. And one of the things, you know, arguing about whether it's man-made, arguing about stuff that was really settled back in the last century, is over. We really need to get our planners, and one of the reasons why this march is so important is for everybody to say, this is something I can do. This is a moment when I can do something that will matter. I will get out, and I will get out in mass numbers, and I will demonstrate to my leaders that they need to focus on this. I need to have a sustainable society, and it won't be if we're going to wait for the last minute. One last point. If we wait for a lot of these things to be in our face, we get some dramatic weather, gigantic hurricanes, one right after another, it's going to be too late. If we have Katrina after Katrina, Hurricane Sandy after Hurricane Sandy, we won't be able to prepare for those. We won't be able to handle them. We won't have the money because the government is the assurer of last resort. So I'm just saying it's the media really needs to get moving on this. They really need to connect the dots of things that are happening in Rochester. There's a lot going on, but we hardly ever hear it.
Frank, thanks for the call. And I'm not going to disagree on the larger point of the media does get fixated, you know, or David Gregory will have Bill Nye along with James Inhofe or somebody, you know, as if it's sort of this false equivalence. And I get that. And I've probably been part of that problem in some ways. But there is sort of a fine line. And Michelle from Cambridge, Mass. Also addressed that issue of, yeah, we sort of feel like we do get stuck on, is it happening, is it not, et cetera. But I think the media has done a poor enough job covering it for the last decade that we still sort of have to go over and cover that ground. And I'm fine with that. I'm not a scientist. I do trust science. I trust evidence. And I don't think that scientists are running a cabal. So I think that, but I also don't mind recircling back to certain points if there are questions, as long as the questions don't come with, you know, you're sinister, you're evil, you're venal. Those are the reasons for it. You know, let's have a conversation about evidence, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here. So, Frank, I appreciate the call there. If you're just joining us, we're talking about an event coming up September 21st in New York City. Susan Spencer, real briefly, before we get back to the phones, which are still flooded, go ahead and recap briefly what's coming up.
So we have a large amount of activities that are occurring that are building up to the People's Climate March. The Climate March itself is on the 21st of September in New York City. You can get information about busing and transportation on peoplesclimate.org/westernny. And there you can also find information about our upcoming press conference and our Art Build Day that is taking place on September 6th from 1 to 3 on Prince Street.
That's on Saturday. Okay. And briefly, Frank also touched on the notion of the people in poverty being sort of impacted by potential climate change in sort of worse and unbalanced ways here. When we hear the term climate justice, and that's been associated with what's going on coming up with the UN, this march on the 21st, what's the definition of climate justice? Let me start with Abby. You hear climate justice. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think there's already we're seeing that climate change that is happening is disproportionately affecting lower income people, not just in the United States. I mean, think of something like Hurricane Katrina, and granted, we cannot draw a parallel between any one single extreme weather event and climate change, but certainly there's an increase, and the people who have the most difficulty recovering from these events are the poor in general. And so then in terms of when we move our discussion forward, talking about policy, what kinds of policy changes will be equitable, will be fair? This shouldn't be a big moneymaker for bankers and savvy businessmen. This should be fair and equitable. And one of the things that we've been discussing amongst ourselves is that we are demanding bold political action to significantly reduce carbon emissions by 2050. But the caveat here is that in a socially just manner. And now there are a lot of different ideas out there for what that would mean, and we have not taken any specific position on that yet. Our coalition is very young, and so we'll likely be moving towards that in that direction. But right now, nothing is being done, and that is clearly unacceptable. So, you know, there's no shortage of policy proposals out there in our political discussions, but what there is a real shortage of is political will to take action, get stuff done. And this climate march, what we're doing, we're gathering people together to demonstrate that political will, that we are demanding our politicians work on our behalf. You know, even us as your average American. We're employing them. They need to work for us.
All right, more calls to get to. Keith, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, good show. I'd like to talk to your guest about the doubters. In the basic chemistry or physics, I remember correctly, the first law of thermodynamics states you can't create matter, you can only change it. And what people don't understand, if, you know, you burn a ton of coal and you got a little ash left over, they think that the coal is gone. But in essence, it's not. It's just changed into another form, which would be carbon dioxide. Now, you take in consideration all the coal that has been burned over the last several hundred years, and you got a lot of carbon dioxide. Now, the only way you're going to get rid of carbon dioxide is, and it's only a temporary fix, is that
plant life uses carbon dioxide, but it's not sequestered permanently. It's only used until they die, and then they give off the carbon dioxide again. And people just don't seem to understand the rules of nature. And when you come to talking about green energy, truly the best one for long term would be wind, because, and you have the people that doubt, well, what do you do when supply can't meet, the demand can't meet supply, or you have a supply and you don't have any need for it? Well, if you turn the wind to electricity, and then you turn the electricity into hydrogen, and you can store the hydrogen, and hydrogen is almost the perfect fuel, because when you burn it, the only byproduct you get is water. But people just can't seem to get a grasp of basic science to understand these issues.
Yeah, Keith, thanks for the call. We have a science teacher here, and she's been nodding with every point that you've made. But, Sue, I'll let you go ahead and respond to Keith there.
I'm so glad that you called in to discuss your ideas. I think it's important to remember that the media likes to play up the conflict, and there really is very little conflict and decreasing amount of conflict even within the citizens of the United States. More recent polling shows that there are fewer people who actually deny the science. And we just tend to focus, I think, too much on that. And there tends to be this prevailing view that Republicans are against, you know, fixing the climate. And that's actually not true. We saw the last three Republican EPA administrators came out, testified in front of Congress that they need to act on climate, need to reduce carbon levels. We've seen Hank Paulson speaking. So there are a lot of voices out there, and I think we just need to try to remember that the climate deniers are a tiny fraction. I think something like 8% of the population.
But real briefly, and we're going to get back to the phones in a second, Sue, his points on just the basic science, that coal burns, it doesn't just go away.
Absolutely, it doesn't. It turns into carbon dioxide, and it's floating in our atmosphere, which is why it's been on the rise.
Let's get John in Pittsford. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to add, while I do believe that climate change is man-made, it doesn't really matter where you stand on that as long as you do something about it. And the things you can do about it are, next time you buy a car, buy something with a better fuel economy, re-insulate your house, buy a more efficient boiler or furnace next time you change up, because that way, you're winning anyway. It doesn't matter what science you do or don't believe. I happen to believe the climate science, but it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you are doing something, because you're going to get paid off anyway by having lower heating bills, better fuel economy, and just general better comfort in your life.
You know, I think this goes back to that climate justice issue, just in that a lot of the burden for solving this crisis has been placed on the shoulders of everyday citizens, telling us, and I'm not disagreeing with you here, it is wonderful to buy a fuel-efficient car. It's wonderful to insulate your house. All of those steps are important. But individual carbon emissions is not the root of this problem. And there's some people who just plain can't afford a new, you know, Prius or whatever it is at the moment that is the most fuel-efficient option. What we really need is sort of a broader systemic overhaul of how we do business, how is our energy produced in the first place. And that is something that individuals can come together to call for action, but you can't go out and buy your own wind turbine unless, well, at least I should say, I can't. but what we can do is call for and demand that our politicians take the initiative for making these options affordable for your everyday folks.
Abby, I hear you saying that we need both. Individual actions are always great, but we have to come together and get collective movement to change in our society.
All right, let's grab one more quick call. This is Neely on the line with us from Rochester. Go ahead, Neely.
Hi. Thanks so much for this show. I've been working with Abby and Sue for the last 6 months. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
And I just wanted to say, to reiterate the point that what it's going to take to actually transition our world away from a fossil fuel-based economy that does threaten our children's future is going to take people coming together. And I've also been involved with Mothers Out Front for the last year and a half, and I know there's a lot of anxiety out there around this, and that sense of, I can go buy my Prius or switch to wind energy, but really what difference in the grand scheme of things is that going to make? And this march is one opportunity. Taking action is a way to alleviate that anxiety. So I speak to all mothers out there, all parents out there, anyone who knows and is anxious about climate change to just get engaged and involved in the issue. And there are lots of opportunities in Rochester. And that's all. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Neely. We've got a minute left here, so let's run down the events. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the Webster Library.
Yep, Webster Public Library.
Webster Public Library. Susan Spencer is going to be talking about climate change. Then on Saturday from 1 to 3, Sue, what's going on Saturday?
Yeah, we have the Art Build at the Visual Studios Workshop at 31 Prince Street, and it's free.
Okay, that's on Saturday, and it all leads up to Abby, the 21st.
Actually, even before that, we've got our press conference.
Oh, that's
Tuesday, September 9th at 11
o'clock. That's a week from today. It's a week from today. They'd like to see numbers there. But
and lastly,
it goes to the 21st, Sunday the 21st. You leave at 2 a.m.
We leave at 2 a.m., coming back the next day. The march is at 11 a.m. in New York City.
We had a couple comments online, people asking how to sign up. Where do they go?
The website is peoplesclimate.org/Western New York.
All right. Thank you for taking the time. Abby, nice to meet you here.
Nice to meet you, too.
Sue, thank you. Susan Spencer, under the weather. But the whole point of climate change is we're all under the weather. And look what I just did there. Was that very clever?
Well done. Very, very well done.
Clever. Very clever. Thank you for taking the time, Susan.
Thanks for having me on again, Evan.
John Andrus, thank you for a very busy 2 hours of engineering today and connections. Wonderful interaction with our audience. Glad to have you. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll see you back here on a Wednesday.